Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
Okay, good evening, everyone. So first of all, we want to thank the Mermelsteins for hosting this beautiful, absolutely beautiful Siyum for all of us. And we want to thank everybody who worked very hard to put the shiur together over the course of the year. First of all, our trusted coordinator, Erez, who's always on top of everything. Tremendous. The Magid Eishir, Rabbi Palmer, Rabbi Weissman, Rabbi Rothberger, and everybody who helped, and Rabbi and Avrami Grohl, who really helped put this together. Shimi Globman, who's really going to get a tremendous chelik in Olam Haba. And Adina and Nomi and Shoshana and Moshe and whoever else is in there. Mrs. Mermelstein, whoever is helping helping to put everything together. I know that we wanted to have this in the sukkah. I would like to say for the record that even though in general rain on sukkahs is not a siman bracha, there is no question in my mind that it is siyum on Maseches Tainis. Rain is a siman bracha. Would Rabbi Palmer and Rabbi Rothberger agree to that? There's no question that when we here are making a siyum on Maseches Tainis, we spent who knows how long, how many months, studying about the bracha of rain and the importance of rain and the tefillos of rain. And here we come to be Messiah in the Masechta, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us this beautiful weather, which, as I understand it, is also raining out a couple of baseball games. So there are some ancillary benefits as well. Okay. So I think we're in the last Amud. So at the top of Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph. Is that correct?
Yep.
So Rav Masna Omar says Rav Masna. So I think we're talking about here Tu B'Av. So Rav Masna Omar, Yom Shenitnu Haruge Beitar Lekvura. This is the day that those who were killed in the city of Beitar were permitted to be buried. So we know that the Churban Abayis, which began with the Great Revolt in the year 70, which eventually the Roman army vanquished the Jewish presence in Eretz Yisrael, but they did not expel everyone. And over a number of years following that, there was an effort to stage a revolt, to stage another rebellion, the very famous Bar Kokhba revolt. Bar Kokhba revolt, which was successful for a few years and resulted in an independent state in the land of Israel in the year 132 to the year 135, until the Romans literally sent half of their army, half of their empire army, to Israel to destroy this revolt. The confidence in Bar Kokhba was amazing. I mean, people really believed that he had the vision and the charisma and the courage and the leadership to be able to lead Klal Yisrael back to Geula. He was identified as the Mashiach by some of the Tanoim. So it was a very big loss when that revolt was ultimately extinguished as well by the Romans. And that last stand happened in the city of Beitar, and it was a massacre in the city of Beitar, and that happened on Tisha B'Av. But the Romans did not let the Jewish people bury their dead for a very, very long time. And finally, when they went in to go take care of it, so the Gemara says, "Amar Rav Masna, Oso Yom Shenitnu Haruge Beitar Lekvura." That day that they allowed them to bury the dead of Beitar. So Tiknu B'Yavne, they made a takana in Yavne. We know that in Yavne they were making lots of takanos to remember the Beis Hamikdash and the Churban. They were misaking the bracha of Atov Hametiv, which we're all familiar with. Atov Shelo Yisrichu, the first goodness is that the bodies did not decompose. V'Hametiv Shenitnu L'Kfura. And the second goodness is they had the opportunity to bring these Jewish people to their final resting place, to Kavura. And we see here another example, and we've spoken about this in the past, another example of how even within the darkest moments of Churban, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does certain things, certain miracles, certain things happen so that the Jewish people walk away from those calamities with an understanding that we're down, but we're not out. And the miraculous salvation of these individuals in Beitar was to give the Jewish people a sense of, yes, you're going to leave Eretz Yisrael now, and you're going to go into a very long, bitter galus, but even within that last moment of destruction, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a miracle that relates to something new, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu delays or postpones the natural effects of the decomposition of these bodies, and what that projects is the notion that we go on, we move on. And what's interesting is the bracha that is associated with it is not a bracha of Dayan HaEmes. It's the opposite. It's a bracha that we associate with very good things, with really positive news and positive things and progress and benching and Birchas HaMazon and Ve'achalta, Ve'savata, Ve'rachta, as Hashem Elokecha. And that's, you know, I always thought it was strange when you get to that bracha of Atov Ameh, you know, to think about that, you know, just pause and that the bodies didn't decompose, you know, and then go on to Harachaman, Yishachman, right? You know, like, that never made it into the NCSY benching, bonanza. So the, but that's the point. The point is, we move on, Klal Yisrael moves on, Klal Yisrael builds from the ashes of destruction and moves forward. And that's part of the lesson of Beitar as well. So Beitar is, experienced that miracle for the Jewish people. So tikkun biyamna tov amet tov shlo yisrichu amet yiv shenenu lekfura. Rabbi Rav Yosef tamri tarvayu yom shepasku milichros eitzim lemaracha. This was the day that they stopped shepasku milichros eitzim lemaracha. They stopped collecting or cutting the wood for the mizbeach. Why is that? So Rashi says l'fi shehein lochin, because they were moist. Why? Umeoso azman en koach bechama liyavshon. Because after this point, so the sun is not as strong, so it doesn't dry out the wood. If it doesn't dry out the wood, then the wood is moist. What's wrong with the word being moist? Lefisha eitz sheyesh bo tolas posel lemaracha. Chashina mipnei atolos. We're worried that there'll be worms in the wood because it's moist, and if there are worms in the wood and it's moist, so then that's not good for the mizbeach. So therefore, so what's the simcha? The simcha is that they completed this mitzvah, this very important mitzvah of having the maracha, of having the wood for the mizbeach. So Rabbi Eliezer Agadol Omer, Rabbi Eliezer Agadol says, Mechamisha Asar Ba'av, from the 15th of Av, Ve'elech, Toshash Kocho Shel Chama. Right? That's when the koach of the chama, of the sun, starts to wane. Ve'lo hayu korsin eitzim lemaracha v'she'enin yavashi. And that's what the Gemara says, what Rashi quoted before. Since they weren't dry, so that's the reason why they stopped. So that's it's a big simcha, because that mitzvah is complete, and there's a sense of accomplishment, of achievement, with that aspect of the mizbeach. Amarav menashia v'karule, some would call this day Yom Tavar Magol, like the day of the breaking of the axe. So what happens? Mikan ve'elech, from Tuba Av and forward, Demosif Yosef, Videlo Masif Yaosef. So the Rashi says, what does that mean? Mikan ve'elech, Mechamisha Asar ve'elech, from the 15th and onward, Demosif Leilos Al Hayamim, Lasuk V'Torah Yosef Chayim Al Chayav. What happens after Tuba Av? So the nights start getting a little bit longer, right? The nights start getting a little bit longer. What are we supposed to use a longer night for? We're supposed to use a longer night for Limud HaTorah. The mitzvah of Limud HaTorah applies V'Gisa Bo Yomam V'Laila. It's very important not only to learn Torah in the daytime, but also to learn Torah at night. When Yaakov Avinu finds himself in Beit El, so the Pasuk says V'Yolen Shom, right, that he went to sleep. So Rashi says, we actually on our trip, we went to Beit El, and we saw the rock where they say that Yaakov slept, and I, of course, sat down and went to sleep and took a picture. So I saw no ladders though. I did see a frustrated wife. So Yaakov Avinu, the Rashi says, he went to sleep then because he hadn't slept for the years and years that he was learning in Yeshivas Shem Ve'Ever. The notion that there's a special, and the Rambam talks about this, there's a special quality to Limud HaTorah at night. There's a special quality when an individual is sort of conquering their own physical exhaustion and allocating that time for spiritual pursuits and to engage in Limud HaTorah. There's a special quality to that Limud HaTorah. Those of us that had the great privilege to learn in a yeshiva full-time at some point in our lives, remember, you know, the night seder, the Thursday night, 11 o'clock at night, sitting there with a Coca-Cola and a Gemara, and just the atmosphere and the feel and the batala and the experience and the limud and the learning and the everything. It's a different type of the Shulchan Aruch writes. A person has to be very careful to learn at night. So learning at night has a very special quality. But the low masif, but if you don't add to your learning at that point, so what happens? So Maya Asif, Amrav Yosef, Tik Barye Ime. So you'll end up being collected yourself, that God forbid, you won't live as long of a life. Meaning we have to invest ourselves in things that matter and things that relate to our eternity. Shebehem Benos Yerushalayim. So what would happen? They would, Benos Yerushalayim would come out, Yom Kippur and on Tu B'Av for Shiduchim. So Tanu Rabbanan, Bas Melech Sho'eles Mibas Kohen Gadol. So here's the way it would go. This Gemara is probably the biggest Chiddush in the entire Masechta. The women would all loan each other their clothing, right? So what would happen? And they would all loan down. So the Bas Melech would borrow from the Kohen Gadol, the Bas Kohen Gadol, the Bas Kohen Gadol, mi Bas Gan, from the assistant, Bas Gan, mi Bas Mashuach Melchama, Bas Mashuach Melchama, mi Bas Kohen Hedyot, v'chol Yisrael sholin zemizet. Everybody borrowed from each other their clothing. Nobody wore their own wardrobe. Why? Today, shelo yisbayesh es misha enlo, so that nobody would be embarrassed that they didn't have as nice clothing, right? Kol akelim teunim tevila. The other thing they would do is they would tovel everything. Amar Rabbi Elazar, afilu mekufalin umenachem bekufsa. Even if it was folded and put away in a box, they just tovelled everything so that nobody would be embarrassed. Benos Yisrael yotzos v'cholos v'chramim. So they would go in these vineyards. Tana misha ein lo isha nifne l'sham. A person who wasn't married, they would go there. This was the Wayu connects of the day. Meyuchases shebahen hayu omros bachor. So what would the Gemara now spells out what it was discussing in the Mishnah, the different approaches here. So how did this work? Tana rabbanon yefi yaf yefios. So shebahen the beautiful ones. Mayu omros. What would they say? Tnu einechem liyofi. Look, you know, their attributes that they wanted to feature were the attributes of beauty. Shena Isha Eloyofi, because who wanted to want a beautiful wife? Meyuchasos. So let's say you weren't on the, you know, the of the Yofios, but you were Meyuchasos. You had a great lineage. Shibahen. So ma you had great yichos. So mahayu omros, what did they say? Tinu enechel mishpacha. Look at the mishpacha. Lefishena Isha Elabanim, because the goal here is ultimately to build families. So we should look at where the families are coming from, what the families are going to be connected to. Mechwaros Shebahem, those that were not of the most attractive, Mahayu Omros, what would they say? Kechu Mikakrem Lishum Shamayim. Right? You should take people who care about Yerushamayim, who care about things that are most noble and most important. Right? Ubavad Sheteatruno Rono Bizuhavim. But that when you get married, then you should get them something nice, something beautiful, to crown them with something gold. So Amar Ula Biyira. So what's the point here? The point is that there are different types of people, and everybody is looking for different things. And at the end of the day, we all know that Sheker Achein Behevel Ayofi Isha Yiras Hashem Yitisalo, right? And at the end of the day, you know, you want to look for authenticity, you want to look for something that matters. So what happens to the beauty? So I was talking with somebody about this at the Lulav and Esrog sale, that I was looking at the Esrog this year. You know, as people bring it over to you, they're like, is this gorgeous? Is this gorgeous? Is this gorgeous? And at some point I stopped and I looked at this thing, and I said to myself, this really is not so gorgeous. Like, even even when it doesn't have any spots, it's bumpy, it's awkward, it's really not the prettiest fruit you've ever seen. We've sort of conditioned ourselves that it's the prettiest fruit we've ever seen because we spend $80 on this fruit, right? But if I were to go into the market and I were to, you know, want to sweep a woman off her feet, or if someone would want to do that, right, and they had a beautiful red rose, and they had a very bumpy S rose with a cart all around it, but had absolutely no black spots, right? Which would you say is a more romantic gesture of beauty? Like, which would you say? And yet, part of Sukkos is, and part of the experience of Dalet Minim, is to attribute beauty to things that may not even be objectively beauty. Beautiful. We make them beautiful. We've decided they're beautiful. We've made them. We've decided to make them beautiful. And the truth is, that theme is in other areas of Sukkos. We have a mitzvah to decorate the sukkah. Look at these beautiful decorations. That's what it says in my notes, right? Look at these beautiful, look at these beautiful decorations, right? What are you decorating a sukkah for? You put it up with a bunch of, you know, half walls and loveds and dofen akumas and schach falling in, and you know. I know now that you can get like very fancy sukkahs and people can come and put them up, but even like a basic sukkah, and what you think, so noise sukkah, so you think like with this piece of canvas, now that I stuck a third grader's egg carton glitter hanging apparatus that is now dripping paint into all of my food, now that becomes noise sukkah. Like that fills a mitzvah, a hiddur of noise sukkah. I stick a poster on the thing that's like the laminate is like rolling up at the corner, and that's now noise sukkah. And the point is, but everybody walks in, and when a sukkah is beautifully decorated with these little chains and with these things and with these posters and with these projects, everybody says, this is a beautiful sukkah. And they're not just saying that. Like, you know, they're not just saying that. You don't walk in and be like, it's got good personality, this sukkah. You know what I'm saying? It's not what you say when you walk into the sukkah, right? You're not faking it. You really appreciate it. You think it's been decorated beautifully. You think it's beautiful, even though this structure is not beautiful. Part of Sukkos is to recognize, when we focus on the Torah Hashkafa of materialism and these kinds of things, is there's nothing wrong with beauty, but understand that, like, we have the capability, we have the capacity to beautify things, to recognize things for their inner worth and their inner value, and then redefine how we relate to the externals based on that. And that is incredibly important, especially in the context of this sugya, right? When we relate to those we love, when we relate to a spouse, right? That we recognize that the outer beauty is often most appreciated when there is a deeper appreciation of the inner beauty. When the relationship is healthy and the relationship is strong and there's a strong appreciation for who each other is and what they bring to the family, what they bring, what they accomplish, what they sacrifice and what they contribute, when all of that is solid and is real, so then, you know, the wrinkles and the gray hairs and the whatever, you know, that come inevitably with life is not, does not have the same, it doesn't have the same frustration. But when there's no appreciation for Isha Yiras Hashem Yitisalot, there's no appreciation for inner beauty, so then we tend to notice, you know, everything. Then we tend to notice everything and struggle with everything. And that's part of the Torah's Hashkafa. The Torah doesn't deny the fact that there are objective human perceptions of beauty. Like, that exists, you know, in symmetry, in color, in just, you know, the way we've been conditioned to certain things being beautiful. But what the Torah wants us to understand is that that's not the only way to relate to beauty. It's a very superficial way to relate to beauty. There are deeper ways, and that's what Hiddur Mitzvah is really about. Hiddur Mitzvah is about appreciating the inner value of the mitzvah, and that comes across then in how you adorn and relate to the mitzvah in such a special way. So then the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lasos Machol Tzadikim. So what's going to happen at the end of days with Mashiach? So the answer is, it's going to be one big NCSY Havdalah. That's what the Gemara says. Amar Rabbi Elazar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to make a very big circle, V'hu Yoshev B'neihem B'Gan Eden, and he will sit amongst them in Gan Eden, V'chol Echad B'Echad Mare B'Etzvo, and everyone will point from the circle, will point with their finger, Shenemar, as it says, the Amar Bayomahu, say in those days, Hinei Elokeinu Zeh, Hinei Elokeinu, this is our Hashem, Zeh Kivinu Lo V'Yoshienu, we hoped for him and he saved us, Zeh Hashem Kivinu Lo, this is the Shem that we hoped for, Nagila V'Nismicha B'Yeshua So, and let us rejoice in his Yeshua. This is a very appropriate, Gemara for tonight, because Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful idea, which you'll indulge me, because I might say again in shul. But Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful idea that the Hoshanos that we say throughout Sukkos, so we march around the shul in what could in some context be defined as a circle, but it's some sort of something, right? And what's in the middle? But what's in the middle? Sefer Torah. Sefer Torah is in the middle, right? So what happens on Simchas Torah, says Rav Soloveitchik? So why do we do that? Because the whole Sukkos, the whole Yom Noraim, the whole Elul, the what's in the middle, what's in the center of our lives, it's in the center of our lives is the Torah. What happens on Simchas Torah? On Simchas Torah, we remove the Torah from the center, and the Torah joins Kal Yisrael in the circle. And what's in the middle? So the rubber quote this Gemara. In the middle is Kadosh Baruch Hu himself. And that's the culmination of Yom Noraim. The ability to recognize that if you take the Torah, we focus for a number of weeks on the Torah being the center of our life, and if we're able to integrate that into how we live our lives, we're able to bring that Torah into the circle, then what becomes the middle? What becomes the focal point? What becomes the center? The center is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And I think it's the Chafetz Chaim who says that this image of the circle is meant to make the following point, and that is that many, many different points on the perimeter of a circle, right? Each point on the perimeter of a circle has a unique radius that travels from the perimeter to the center of the circle. And no two radii overlap, right? But they all meet in a common center. Klal Yisrael stands in a circle. Everybody has their own journey. Everybody has their own Derech and Avodas Hashem. Everybody has their own set of circumstances, their own challenges, their own talents, their own capabilities, their own difficulties, their own story. Everybody's got their own road to travel, and your job is not to construct your road like someone else's road. Your job is not to say to yourself, I shouldn't be doing it this, I should be doing how he's doing it. Your job is to travel from your point in the circle to the center, to the middle, to where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, in the way in which HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you to accomplish those things. The key is we have to all be headed towards a common center. We have to all recognize that that ultimately is what anchors us, which is there in the middle. And so that's the imagery of Simchas Torah. And in fact, Rabbi Soloveitchik, they say, would actually Rabbi Schachter told me this, he would put like ropes or whatever around the bima, so that people couldn't go on the bima during hakafos, because he was so makpid on this yesod that the hakafos are really about having HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the middle and Klal Yisrael circling around and around. Yei ratzon that our dedication to Limud HaTorah through this incredible shir and through this incredible chabura in our shul, the larger chabura of our community, the larger chabura international of people who are learning with the Daf HaShavua, that we should all be able to use this as our own Kinyan HaTorah, and that we should be able to circle this year with a different level of Islavos in our Simchas HaTorah, because we were Kona, yet another Masechta, yet another mark on our road from the perimeter to the center. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should just give us the health and the strength and the ability and the inspiration to be able to continue in Mirtz Hashem with many, many more to come.
So we're even firmer. We don't need to be. We go downstairs.
We go downstairs. Okay.
Yeah. I did the other stuff, so let somebody else.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.